weird. Some days you're okay and you're doing just fine. Other days it still hurts like it's fresh. It's a process with no definitive time frame. You just have to keep going and know that when all is said and done, you're going to be okay.
Welcome back to Navigating Life with Neurodiversity. I'm Matt, and today we're going to dive into a topic that I and the autistic individuals struggle with deeply and on a daily basis. In many ways, this episode is a continuation from my previous episode where I discussed how nonsensical rules and social injustice can contribute towards the subject of today's discussion, the dreaded but mostly inevitable explosion. One of the most difficult things about living with a mind that processes things differently is trying to explain my reactions don't always make sense to the people around me. Sometimes I explode, seemingly out of nowhere. It isn't always predictable. It's rarely what I want to happen. But when my brain gets overwhelmed, when the sensory input, the emotional toll, and the exhaustion all pile up, I can snap. And that snap is often misunderstood. So when talking about overstimulation and like the boiling point, imagine a pot of water simmering on a stove. At first it's just warm and then small bubbles forming at the bottom, easy to ignore. As the heat builds, those bubbles rise, turning into a full rolling boil. And if you don't take the pot off the heat or turn down the burner, eventually it's going to overflow. That's what overstimulation does to me. Every sound, every bright light, every unexpected change in my environment adds to the heat under the pot. A normal conversation might become quite overwhelming if there's simply too much background noise. A simple request can feel like an impossible demand if I'm already at my limit. And when that limit is reached, the reaction can be sudden, intense, and sometimes out of my control. Sometimes, instead of just boiling over in an outburst, the pot just evaporates. The pressure is still there, but instead of snapping, I just shut down completely. I'm too overwhelmed to engage, too exhausted to respond, and I retreat inwards. Unable to process or interact, and this can be just as confusing to the people around me, because from the outside, it looks like I've checked out. So what is sensory overload? In a nutshell, everything is just too much. One of the hardest parts of overstimulation is when you have multiple sources of sensory input colliding all at once. Ironically, this is especially challenging in high-pressure environments, even in places where I might normally excel, for example, work. To use a recent example, I went to visit a resident in a care home, trying to focus on what a resident is saying to me whilst 80 other residents in the same room are loudly having their own conversations with themselves, with other members of staff, arguing with each other. The member of staff trying to speak to me is wearing a face mask. Their words are muffled. They're unclear. There is a television blaring in the background, presumably to drown out the noise of all the residents. But these competing sounds and the fragmented communication and the pressure to process everything all at once quickly becomes too much. Now, to use that specific example as a scenario, I was working with a mentor who, for some reason, having only just met me, was able to recognize where this was heading and suggested perhaps we moved into a quieter room so that we could take handover. I think my eye had started twitching and she perhaps predicted that an explosion was on its way. And God bless her, she was able to defuse it. It's not necessarily just about noise either. Bright lights, strong smells, even sometimes the feeling of a restrictive uniform can add to the overwhelming mix. When my senses are overloaded, it becomes nearly impossible to focus. I always feel that my patience and my ability to regulate my emotions is slipping away. And it's in these moments that my boiling point comes faster. To use another work example, I had a bit of a panic attack on shift with a colleague and essentially started taking off my uniform in the ambulance. And it wasn't until she was able to pull us over and calm me down that I put my top back on and was convinced that I could breathe again. But these environments are extremely challenging. For many like myself who were diagnosed later in life, social interactions have often been learned by mirroring others rather than through an innate understanding of social norms. And this means that much of my behaviour growing up was shaped by observing what worked for others and adjusting my own approach accordingly. For example, in school, that I noticed acting the class clown and joking around got a much more positive reaction than being serious and taking class seriously. And this wasn't because I didn't care about learning. It was because I had learned humour could make social interactions easier. Being the funny one meant I could navigate friendships and avoid awkwardness, even if that was my natural inclination. Similarly, in different settings, I would adopt different roles based on what was socially acceptable or well received. If I saw that a particular way of speaking, dressing, or engaging with people got positive responses, I would likely replicate that behaviour. And over time, this led to a deep sense of masking, presenting a version of myself that I thought people wanted to see rather than what felt authentic to me. I used to often hear compliments like, "I really like your personality." And my internal reply was always, "Thanks, I made it for you," because I'm mirroring what works to an individual. The challenge was this kind of learned socialization is that it often comes at quite a cost. Constantly adapting to fit expectations is exhausting, and when overstimulation adds to that pressure, it makes it even harder to regulate emotions. This can make social interactions feel like a performance rather than a natural exchange, leading to burnout and an increased risk of emotional overload. One of the clearest examples of this is how I can act extroverted in certain situations. I'm at a party, for example, I can maintain a high energy approach and be social for a few hours. If, for example, I need to give a speech at a wedding, I can deliver it flawlessly, complete with humour and confidence. But these interactions, no matter how well executed, are often far more exhausting on my mind than any other situation. Once they're over, I feel mentally drained, as if I've just run a marathon. The effort it takes to maintain that persona, reading social cues, responding appropriately, managing facial expressions, and keeping up with conversation dynamics is insane. It's not that I don't enjoy these moments, they just come at a cost, leaving me depleted and needing significant time alone to recover. After many family events, I will leave the Irish goodbye, as they call it. I will vanish. And I will follow up with a text, "It was really lovely to see everyone, and I genuinely mean it, but now I need some time to go and recover on my own." To try and explain what this might look like to someone on the outside, and maybe help recognize the signs in the people around them, it can seem like I lash out without warning. Maybe I snap at someone who asks me a question, or I shut down completely, refusing to respond. I might raise my voice, maybe I push people away, maybe I say things in frustration that I will later regret. It's not because I want to be mean or I'm trying to be mean. Trust me, if I wanted to be mean, you would know. It's not because I don't care, it's because my brain is screaming at me to escape the overwhelming pressure, and in that moment, everything feels like a threat. Recognizing the signs of overstimulation before reaching this breaking point is crucial. Some early warning signs can include an increased sensitivity to noise, light, or touch, difficulty concentrating or processing information, feeling a sense of irritation or agitation that seems to grow rapidly, a sudden desire to escape or remove myself from the environment, physical signs like headaches, muscle tension, or an increased heart rate, or complete opposite, becoming quieter or more withdrawn, as if mentally preparing for a shutdown. To use another workplace anecdote, I once went out with a colleague who knows me pretty well, can recognize the signs when I'm perhaps getting towards the edge of being overstimulated. We went out to a youngish elderly woman who had fallen and potentially broken her ankle. In that room was the patient in considerable pain, as understandably. Her two middle-aged children were having some sort of sibling argument over whose responsibility was whose in this situation, quite loudly. The TV was on very loudly. There were three grandchildren all playing on Nintendo DS, Nintendo XL, handheld games consoles, with the volume on full blast. And every time I'm trying to ask a question to my patient, I can't hear the answer. So I'm having to repeat the question. And my colleague, who I won't name, she'll know who she is, could sense my tone changing, could see me becoming more tense, hear me becoming more irritated, and to her credit, suggested, shall we do this assessment on the ambulance? And got me out of a situation before I had like a meltdown in front of a patient. And we went out to the vehicle, which is a quieter, more controlled environment, and everything was fine. But I bring that up as an example of how my colleague was able to recognize these signs in me and make a suggestion that prevented me from entering into an explosion. Because as I'm going to go on to explain, the aftermath of that explosion is quite nasty on those of us who have experienced it. But by identifying these signs early, I can sometimes take steps to prevent myself from reaching a full meltdown. And this might mean stepping away from a situation, doing an assessment in an environment I can control. When traveling, I always wear noise-canceling headphones. Taking in a deep breath or communicating to the people around me that I need a moment to decompress. If you are one of the people that I'm able to turn around to and say, I need a minute, then I want you to understand that I trust you deeply, because in that moment, I'm very vulnerable. Recognizing these cues isn't just helpful for me. As I've said, it's really useful if people around me who want to be supportive but may not understand what's happening in the moment. So the aftermath of these moments, there's often a lot of shame, there's misunderstanding, and sometimes there is a degree of self-punishment. After these moments, I'm often left with guilt, because I know it's not fair to the people around me. I know that my reactions can be hurtful or confusing, and I also know that in those moments, my ability to regulate my emotions is stolen from me by the weight of overstimulation and stress. What makes it harder is that people often don't understand. They see the explosion, but they don't see the pressure that built before it. They see reaction, not the cause. And because I'm intelligent, capable, or high functioning in many areas of my life, it's easy for people to assume that I should always be in control. We know from previous episodes that at work, I have no problem projecting control. However, outside of work, control is a completely different story. And that's where what people don't see happens. People don't see how I punish myself afterwards, how I will replay every word, every reaction, every moment where I've lost control, and tell myself that I should have been better. I should have managed it differently. I should have stopped it beforehand. I dwell on what I might have lost. Friendships that have become strained, opportunities that have slipped away, sometimes trust that was damaged. Self-punishment can take many forms. Sometimes I socially exclude myself, I will withdraw, and I will stay away from people for a period of time, isolating my way as some sort of atonement for the outburst. Other times it can escalate into acts of physical self-harm. It's important to stress that these actions aren't just about punishing myself. They're about regaining control and forcing myself back to a baseline, to a place where I feel like I have a handle on things again. But in the long run, these coping mechanisms only reinforce the cycle of guilt, exhaustion, and burnout. And I know that for many, self-harm and suicide is a sensitive and serious subject. And I do have an upcoming episode addressing, in my view, some of the differences and some of the mentality behind both from a point of experience. But to understand something is not to excuse it. If you know someone who struggles with overstimulation, emotional outbursts, please try to see beyond the explosion and try to recognize the pressure that came before it. But that being said, recognizing and managing my own emotions is 100% my responsibility. And this post is not designed to absolve me of any of that responsibility, but rather to share the struggles I experience. If anything, my hope is that by understanding some of these challenges, you may recognize them in someone else, perhaps even before they reach their breaking point. Because if you can help them step away, take a break, or reduce the sensory overload in their environment, you might be able to help them avoid the meltdown and all of that shame that follows. Sometimes a small act of understanding, offering a quiet space, removing an overwhelming stimulus, or simply not taking a reaction personally can make all the difference. With awareness, we can build a more supportive and accommodating world, one where those who struggle with overstimulation don't have to fight so hard just to exist in it. And finally, if you've been on the receiving end of one of my outbursts, genuinely, I apologize. It was never about you. It was about what was going on in my head at the time. If what was said or done in the moment cannot be forgiven, that's understandable. But I just want to explain how it happened and why. And that's it for this episode. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for more. Until then, stay safe.
I hope you find some peace of mind in this lifetime.
Tell them the truth.
I hope you find some paradise.